Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Eid, Judge Smith, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, February 15th, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar today. They are all set for oral argument, the first of which is A23-1161, and that is Jamie Lindholm as guardian ad litem for Emma Lindbaum, I'm pronouncing it right, versus Becker Independent School District number 726. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. The podium in the middle, there's a button underneath to raise and lower the podium itself, and then you can also adjust the microphone as well. When you begin, please state your name for the record, and the party you are representing. This is being recorded as well, so you will have access to the recording within a day or two, so you can listen to the oral arguments if you so wish. And with that, appellant, you may begin.
Mark Smith on behalf of Becker Independent School District. If it pleases the court, counsel. Governmental immunity protects against not only right decisions with unfortunate results, but wrong decisions with bad results. That's a quote from Olson versus Ramsey County. We're here in a de novo review of a summary judgment order denying immunity to Becker School District. The facts are not in dispute. It's the unique facts of this case and the situation involved, the policies involved, what happened on the day of the occurrence that has to be looked at and examined by the court to determine if official immunity applies or not. The activity that is at issue in this case is the transportation of special needs public school children and the discretion exercised by staff transporting those children and all the duties they had to execute in that process. The staff actions and decisions were not ministerial functions. They were discretionary functions. The trial court erred when it held that the duties of staff were ministerial in nature and not discretionary.
What were the discretionary duties undertaken in this instance?
Certainly, Judge. The policies of the school district outline numerous duties and responsibilities of staff in executing their transportation responsibilities. The trial court held that the staff had one specific ministerial duty, which was to safely transport the children. And that duty under Supreme Court and appellate court precedent is simply too broad. So what in fact staff had to do here, and the affidavits and the testimony is very clear, as are the policies, there are broad policies requiring a laundry list of things: keep an on-time schedule, safely transport the students, have proper interactions or necessary communications with receiving staff, people at the school who you're dealing with, communicate with them about problems or issues. Those are all very broad policy statements, the type of policy statements that under Minnesota law are too broad to create ministerial duties.
Is that really applicable here, though? Isn't really the issue of whether or not the student was properly unloaded from the van? Isn't that really what we need to focus on here?
It's the entire process, Judge. It's the situation that you're confronted with. So stepping back for a second, the police officer who runs a red light is permitted to do that under certain circumstances. Normally, he or she cannot run that red light. It's the situation that controls whether or not that's discretionary. Here, in terms of discretion, Staff were not given directives as to where to position themselves, who was to perform what function, who was to do what in what order, and what of the myriad responsibilities they had was to take precedent over anything else.
Okay, so let's break it down then. So, and you know, and watching the video, which I watched several times, so basically the driver gets out, opens the back door, pushes a button to get the lift up level, and then the assistant unbuckles the student who is in a wheelchair, pushes the student onto the lift, the driver lowers the person down, and then they push the student away. That's really what we're talking about here, right? Those are the actions that we need to focus on in this case, right?
I don't believe so, Judge. I believe the actions.
Why not? That seems to be, because I mean, looking at the case law and you know, one case that the parties didn't cite, and I won't hold it against either party because you didn't, but there's a Sharice case that I wrote a number of years ago in which this court outlined the situations in which official immunity applies and it does not apply. And looking at the case law, both before and after that case, we focus on the particular acts involved. And you highlighted, and I think it's an appropriate example, of situations like with police officers. If they're just doing a routine police stop, they may not be entitled to official immunity. But if it's one in which they have to exercise discretion, they may be entitled to official immunity in terms of deciding whether or not they should engage in a high-speed car chase, situations like that. But if it's just a routine stop, it may be only ministerial duties. And so I'm struggling to see how the acts here go beyond that. So, where's the discretion in terms of hitting the button to lower or lift, raise the lift?
Right. So in terms of where they position themselves, that's between the two of them. They decide what they do. What Your Honor's focusing on is what the trial court indicated was it's just pushing the button. It's just making sure the lift is in the right position. And sometimes, ideally, that's what happens. But in this case, in this instance, because of what had happened earlier, because of Canning believing he needed to communicate and was concerned and wanted to communicate with the receiving staff, that was what led to the wrong button being pushed.
But so isn't really an issue of safety first? Isn't his first duty to make sure that she gets off appropriately and safely before engaging in conversation with other people? And he seemed to acknowledge that as well.
The duties that they're charged with are not delineated in any particular order. I think that everyone would agree that is a very important goal. That is the ultimate goal.
Right.
But there's no specific ministerial directive as to what has to be done or in what order, or that he, Koenig, should not or is excused from exercising his other duties. So in this case, the reason that lift is out of position is because of what has happened earlier in the ride. They are now late. He arrives. He's trying to perform the tasks that they need to do to get the students off the bus, off the van, safely.
And what are those tasks?
Well, they could vary on day-to-day, Judge, but in terms of this rider in the back, the tasks they need to do to get her off involve deploying the lift, getting her on the lift, and lowering it. But in the midst of all that, he still has all of his other duties, and he makes the judgment call. And Canning agrees it was a wrong judgment call. Lemire agrees it was a wrong judgment call. No one's disputing that. But he exercises his judgment because he believes it's important to communicate with the receiving staff.
At the expense of safety.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. I just wanted to ask, I'm trying to understand your argument because as I'm hearing what you're saying, it seems like you're asking us to focus on the policy that the school district had regarding safely transporting the student to school and to decide whether based on the policy the duty is ministerial or discretionary. And you're saying because it's too broad, we have to conclude it's discretionary. But doesn't the Supreme Court's case law require us to focus on the conduct at issue, and whether the conduct is discretionary or ministerial? So that we're not looking necessarily, I mean, obviously, the policy matters, what the school district's general policy is, but we're required under the, you know, under Vassallo to look at the conduct at issue, whether the conduct is discretionary or ministerial, and if ministerial, whether any ministerial duties were violated, and then if discretionary, whether the conduct was willful or malicious. So I think that's why Judge Reyes's questions are focused on what the actual conduct was, which is raising or lowering the lift and pushing out the student once the lift is raised and in place. Can you address why I'm framing that wrong?
I'm not sure you are, but the issue here is the conduct that is at issue is when Koenig shifts his focus and shifts his attention to communicate. So that was a discretionary decision. There is discretion that goes into all those other things, positioning, et cetera, et cetera. And ideally, the lift gets deployed, the wheelchair is placed on it, the lift gets lowered. But the reason in this case, which is what you have to focus on and look at, is why was Koenig distracted? Why did he look away? Why was he not in the moment?
But why does that matter? I mean, why does it matter? It could have. What if, you know, a car was driving by that was, you know, an interesting color, or a bird was flying by, and that's what distracted him? The conduct at issue is raising and lowering the lift and then safely unloading the student. So does it matter why the person was distracted when they lower? Because if it's not a discretionary act, that conduct, raising and lowering the lift and pushing the student out onto the lift, then does it really matter what the reason for the distraction was?
It does matter. And the distraction was due, and the testimony is clear in this, he was concerned about communicating with staff about what had happened, the emergency that happened earlier, and why H was not on the bus.
But did that relate to the conduct of raising or lowering the lift and unloading the other student? If, for example, the person said, hey, you know, there's something going on with the student you're unloading that you need to be careful of, or something relating to that conduct, that act of unloading the student, wouldn't your argument be stronger? I mean, what happened with H and the prior stop had nothing to do with unloading the plaintiff.
And we submit it did, Judge. It did, because they're still feeling the effects. He's concerned about communicating. He gets there, and he's unloading, he's deploying the lift, and in that process, he was going to talk to the staff about what has happened, explaining to them why H is not there. Someone's calling for H. He whacks it or hits his hand, and he hits the wrong button. So the reason that the lift is in the wrong position is because he was exercising his discretion. Wrong or right, second-guessing is not the point here. We all agreed it ended up being the wrong thing. But the reason that that happens is he's trying to execute all of his duties, and he turns and he's distracted. So that is the conduct. It's the trying to execute all of his responsibilities at the same time. And in those actions, in that specific act, he makes a decision. It was a wrong decision in retrospect. He admits that, but that doesn't eviscerate the immunity that applies. And the reason we talked about the policies generally is because the district court held that there was a specific policy, safely unload. Vassallo and Bryden both are very clear. That's too broad of a policy. There wasn't a specific directive as to what you had to do and when you were unloading the students to not do anything else. It wasn't that detailed. It wasn't specific. Safely unload is too broad to create a ministerial duty. So these staff members have conflicting duties to some extent. Be on time, safely unload, communicate with parents, communicate with students, communicate with receiving staff. They have to do all those things. Now, do we all think that safely unloading students is very important and ultimate goal? Yes, but it's not detailed and specific enough to create a ministerial duty. And the reason that the lift ends up being out of position is because he's trying to execute all his duties at the same time.
If there was a specific policy that said you have to operate the lift with the lift fully raised before the student is pushed on the lift, you can't push the student onto the lift unless the lift is fully raised, and you have to carefully lower the lift down, in that scenario, you're saying it would be a ministerial duty. You need that level of particularity with the school's policies. to have a ministerial duty.
And I think you would also need to the exclusion of all of their duties and responsibilities, that you are to ignore all of their duties and responsibilities, and you are not to execute them at the same time or try to execute them at the same time.
Can you cite any case law to support that approach? That seems contrary to case law.
I think, Judge, we in the briefs, and we've argued this, you can't distill down the action. So with the police officer.
Why not?
Because it's the entire.
That's part of what we do is, you know, focus on the particular conduct.
But the police officer, when he's going to run the red light, he's allowed to run the red light, right? The fact that he hits someone else in performing that, it's not the hitting the person or hitting another car that's the conduct. It's the overall situation. A decision was made discretionary to run the red light. He's allowed to do that. It's not, you can't distill out the contact with the other vehicle as the sole issue. It's the entire confluence of all of the circumstances of the day and the policies at issue that you have to look at. You can't distill it down that far. In Bailey, you can't say it was improper intubation. In Bailey, there was a specific policy about intubation, how to do it. They did it wrong once. They tried a second time. It was still wrong. The district court held that that was non-discretionary. It was ministerial. The appellate court said you have to look at the entire set of circumstances. And in this case, while it's not an emergency, the fact that there were split decisions made by Koenig, even though they were wrong, is a very important factor the court needs to look at as well. So it's the confluence of all of the policies and the situation you have to look at. It's not just lowering the lift.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel, for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Matt Barber, along with Michael Tewksbury for the respondent, Jamie Lindbaum. Sorry for my voice. I'm coming off a sinus thing, so. May it please the court, counsel. On behalf of Jamie Lindbaum, the district court got it right. We would ask that the district court be affirmed. It correctly applied the law to the circumstances of this case. It focused on the specific conduct that caused this fall, or that is alleged to have caused this fall. That was the unloading of a student who requires the use of a wheelchair from this school van. The district court looked at the unloading steps in particular, making sure that the lift was in place before pushing the student onto the lift and then lowering it to the ground while the student was on it. Those are ministerial tasks because they are simple and they are definite. They're simple in that they're performed the same way every time. They're definite because the lift is either in place or it isn't in place. It's binary, it's a yes or no. And this is consistent with the case law that requires the court to look at the specific conduct at issue. And the attempt by the school district to pile on all these outside and extraneous details to the specific conduct doesn't change anything. What the case law looks at is decisions that inform the specific conduct. So for example, the Killen case, the case where the counselor decided not to alert the parents that the student had suicidal contemplation. That counselor made many decisions or focused on many different things to come about that decision. It looked at the knowledge that counselor had of the student's problems, the observations that the counselor had of that student, the counselor's education and training, that counselor's experience in dealing with similar use, and all of those balances were focused on the decision whether or not to tell the parents about that student's contemplating of suicide. There were no decisions made with respect to unloading Emma Lindbaum in this case by the driver. The video shows that after he swung open the doors, he wasn't paying attention to her at all. He made no decisions about how to safely unload her.
Right, but at the same time, you do see in the video that he is talking to and engaging the person that's responsible, a parent that's responsible for H, who was not in the van because of an earlier situation with respect to the transportation of all the students to the school.
We do see that, Your Honor, but the focus is on the specific conduct that is alleged to have caused the injury, the unloading of Ms. Lindbaum from this van, and there were no decisions made with respect to how to unload her.
But if we were to, let's assume for the sake of the argument that the actions are discretionary because there's no policy saying this is how you load or unload, you need to make sure that you communicate with the para that's in the car, make sure that the timing is right, so the actual transport and unloading, you know, occurs at the same time. Isn't there a concern here that it's looking at it with 2020, they made a mistake in terms of their decision, but if it's a discretionary function, we don't look at that. So the police chase example, the fact that it may have resulted in an accident or even resulted in a death, as long as it's discretionary, we have to put that to the side. We just have to look at whether or not they actually had the discretion to engage in that conduct. And if they had the discretion, we put aside anything in terms of what actually happened as a result of that discretion. We don't look at whether that discretion was exercised rightly or wrongly. So why isn't that the case here?
Because the type of conduct here isn't the type, it's not the nature, quality, complexity to which ministerial or to which common law official immunity applies. We've got guidance from the Minnesota Supreme Court and from this court. We've got kind of signposts for what kind of conduct is ministerial and what is discretionary.
But doesn't this type of conduct change depending on, I mean, in this particular case, you know, the day-to-day, I think that your counterpart's argument is that, you know, let's say that H had actually come to school on the bus and was acting out at the time that they were trying to unload your client from the bus. And that created a dangerous situation that caused a distraction for one of the people trying to unload your client. And in that situation, your client fell under those circumstances versus the paraprofessional trying to get information about where H is. Under those circumstances, there's some competing duties for the professionals involved. They have to be concerned about H's safety and your client's safety at the same time. And that could lead to a discretionary act under that broad duty of safely transporting students to school. Wouldn't you agree that would then result in official immunity under facts like that?
If it was still the unloading process that caused or is alleged to have caused the injuries, then we'd still look at the unloading process, and that needs to be done the same way every time.
So I doubt that actually that the bus was unloaded the same way every time. I mean, I'm sure that the order in which the students had to be unloaded, with especially when you have students that have behavioral issues, where the people need to be positioned as they do it, there was some judgment involved in how to get the bus unloaded. And isn't it a very fact-specific analysis as to whether or not the conduct actually at issue in the particular case results in a ministerial or discretionary act?
I agree it's very fact-specific, but it's a little more granular than just unloading in general. It's making sure the lift is in place before you push the student out of the back of the van.
So in your view, there's no scenario in which the professional's judgment would be divided and would result in that lift not being in place or an accident happening that could lead to a discretionary decision?
If the conduct that's alleged to have caused the injury is about unloading the student involving the lift, then I'm not sure how the discretion comes into play there, because the lift always needs to be in place before the student is pushed onto the lift.
I'll throw out a hypothetical. Okay. Then let's assume we have the same situation, but the driver, as soon as the driver got out, sees another car. Actually, both the driver and the parent see another car that's headed toward the van, and they make the discretionary decision to push the student out of the van, knowing that she's probably going to be injured, but she could potentially be injured more seriously if she stays in the van after she's unbuckled. Wouldn't that be an exercise of discretion in that case?
I agree, Your Honor. That certainly would, because that would be an emergency situation. That would get us into analogous situations like law enforcement when they're chasing a suspect. They're looking out for the safety of others, and they need to make split-second decisions that carry life or death consequences. Here, everyone agreed that the incident with H had ended, and the testimony was that it should not have affected how unloading Emma occurred. So under an emergency circumstance, then the calculus is different. I agree, Your Honor. But here,
okay,
there was
it is fact-specific. There are situations in which the loading or unloading can be affected by outside circumstances.
I agree with that, Your Honor, yes. But okay. The facts of this case, there was no such emergency. Everything had resolved.
So even putting aside an emergency, why isn't the distraction based on a student that should have been there and wasn't with a para? And we don't have the audio, unfortunately, so we don't hear who is saying what. But why wouldn't that distraction by the para asking the driver, apparently asking the driver what's going on, why wouldn't that suffice as an external circumstance that actually is affecting the conduct here?
Because that external distraction or external task was not focused on the unloading process. It was a completely different task that the driver was undertaking at that time. If it were a decision related to unloading Emma from the ramp, say in the unloading process, a car was coming and was going to hit the ramp, and the driver decided to take her off of the ramp to avoid being struck by the vehicle. That would be discretionary. That would be immune. But there wasn't any ongoing emergency or any life or death consequence at issue here. This was still a certain set of facts. It was, sure, they were late to class every day, but that's not the same gravity as a life or death police chase.
What do you make of the argument that the policy is just too broad to result in a ministerial duty? Just simply saying you need to safely transport the students to school.
And, Your Honor, the focus is on the conduct. The policies can affect that, but we look at the conduct, and even in cases where there is no policy, we still focus on the actual conduct, and that's why I wish I would have cited the Cherise case. The snowplows that I saw this morning made me think of that, and I'm kicking myself for not citing that.
That's okay. I take no offense by either party.
There was no snow all winter, so
exactly.
I can't fault you for not bringing it up.
Right. Unless the court has any other questions, we would respectfully ask that the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
I see no other questions. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
So you don't need an emergency. You don't need an emergency for official immunity to apply. However, when there is split-second decision-making or an emergency, that can make it more clear. And in this case, there was split-second decision-making, albeit wrong, albeit subject to second-guessing, and even Koenig admits he made the wrong decision. He wishes he had not focused his attention and shifted his attention. But he did, because that in that moment, he believed or he thought that was the right decision to make, to execute that other duty that he had to communicate with receiving staff and explain why H wasn't there and what had happened with H. The task is not just the unloading or the positioning of the lift. The task at issue is everything they were charged with. And the reason the lift was out of position is because he focused his attention to execute another duty that he had. It wasn't looking at a bird. He wasn't looking at a car. He wasn't checking his cell phone. He was shifting his focus because he believed, and he testifies to this, that on his way there, he was nervous about it. He was still feeling the effects of it. He thought it was important to communicate about what happened immediately. He was concerned staff would be upset about what had happened. He had just laid hands on a minor in a physical altercation, basically, and he was still upset about it.
How does the duty to inform another party override the duty to safety to a student?
I don't know that it overrides it, Judge, but there are conflicting duties here, and there are decisions that staff have to make. And
I think it has to rise to a certain level in terms of a conflicting duty. It just doesn't seem that it rises to the level of one that should even be considered, particularly when our focus has to be on the conduct at issue of safely loading and unloading.
Right, and again, I think the conduct of the issue was the determination, decision to talk or engage with the other staff. So if you're saying in a vacuum, what's more important, safety or talking to other staff, I think that 100% people would answer the safety. But it's a mistake that was made. So he's made a mistake in exercising the discretion.
I don't think the focus is on whether it was a mistake or not. The focus is on whether or not it was a discretionary or ministerial duty, and I'm not sure how that rises to one where discretion is involved when you're talking, when the conduct at issue is the safe loading, safe unloading of a student from a van.
Safe unloading is too broad. The staff has to decide what's safe about unloading.
But we have to look at the conduct. The case law says that we clearly says we need to focus on the conduct at issue, not the policy.
And the conduct here is his decision to engage with other staff that distracts him. I think that's the conduct you need to focus on. It's again, it's the overall situation. It's not simply distilling out the bad piece that happened and, oh, could that have been avoided? It's how did you get there? What factors, what policies, what was going through staff's mind to get to that situation?
But if the conduct is that you're asking us to focus on is the negligent conduct, wouldn't that mean official immunity would apply in virtually every case? Because a case would come to court, someone would make a bad decision, and they use their discretion to make that decision, but that doesn't mean that what they did was a discretionary duty, does it, in every case?
I don't think that's true. I agree with what you're saying. It's not every case, and it depends on the policies and what's going on. So, I mean, just to hit some final points, running a red light is not discretionary until it is. Driving the road grader against traffic is not discretionary. You're not allowed to do it until it is by policy or the circumstances that the employee decides necessary to do that. The intubation case is the same way. You have to look at the confluence of all the factors of the day and went into it and what impacted that staff member, that state actor's state of mind, and had them conduct themselves in the way they did. So ultimately, the actions of the day must be looked at, the policies must be looked at, but it's not simply the mistake, it's what got him to the mistake or why he made the mistake. And it's important that staff have that discretion. It's part of the policies, and we submit, even though this was a bad outcome, public policy and the policies of Becker School District support what staff did here, even though it was a mistake.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for your briefing and oral arguments. We appreciate it. We'll be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you all.